I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
I'm going to give the audience what I think they want.
They want chase scenes and car crashes.
They want the cops to bend the rules to get the job done. They want the boy to get the girl. They want the good guy to win. They want the bad guy to die, hopefully in the biggest explosion the budget will allow. But most importantly, Senator, they want to walk into a theater and for 90 minutes forget the fucking mess that you have left of this nation.
Go get your bubblegum.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Hello, and welcome back to the All Out of Bubblegum podcast. With me today, I have Brandon.
Hello.
And Brenton.
Whichever one of us that is.
That is you, I believe. Oh. We're here today to talk about one of the underrated and underseen neo-noirs of the 70s, Hickey and Boggs, a film that, you, Brenton, have been sort of pushing in our general direction for like 10 years, maybe 15 years at this point.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, and I'd never really understood why until I watched the opening credits and I realized Bill Cosby. Because I remember you always said, Bill Cosby, I don't know about his acting, but I'm a big fan of his sexual politics.
exactly right.
No, of course, it's the written by Walter Hill is the one thing I noticed, and I was not aware of when I pushed play on this.
That's interesting.
I believe Walter Hill's first produced screenplay.
I believe so, too. Yeah.
I kind of stumbled upon this, I think, because of Walter Hill, and then just sort of was, oh, this is like an early buddy cop movie. This is kind of like, you know, post Heat of the Night and Dirty Harry. It's like, oh, this is, it's a buddy cop movie. It's very similar structure-wise to like Lethal Weapon.
Or 48 Hours with also Walter Hill.
Yeah. Kind of. Well, I think he kind of more perfects it by then.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, yeah, I think they... What the sort of difference between that and this is, of course, that they already know each other. Kind of the buddies. We are not part of the buddying process. The buddydom already exists.
Yeah, it doesn't do the usual trope of like, I get assigned a new partner. These guys, Bill Cosby plays Icky, and Robert Culp, who also directs, is Boggs. And they're just sort of like these bottom feeder PIs.
They are so burnt out.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Robert Culp in this, I think, has got to be like one of the most just burnt out, doesn't want to be there leads in any movie ever.
He's a zombie.
He just hates his life so bad. He just no interest. He directed this movie. He's like, yeah, I want to play the character who just doesn't give a fuck.
they're, I guess, somewhat clever, but I wouldn't put them on a high list of clever characters because they've clearly made a lot of choices in their life that led them to this point. But man, are they just, they're shitty people and they're swimming in a pool of other shitty people. I mean, everyone in this movie kind of sucks. And that's like the world they live in. I love that it's this, the other thing that I kind of enjoy is that it's a very like dark, grimy movie that is filmed in like the sunniest part of the country. So everything is just bright and sunshiny, but there's just, everything's actually just gross, you know? And every scene is like this, oh, it's either they're stepping in a puddle right away, or it's like, oh, as it goes on, the scene just gets more and more gross. Like the guy in the park.
Yes. I'm glad you brought that up.
Just watching the kids. Yeah, just stuff like that. And you're like, oh my God, what? This movie is just like, yeah, humanity kind of sucks, huh?
Yeah, it's kind of surprising that this is a pre-Watergate, you know, because it feels very post-Watergate, where it's just like, kind of, they just follow the money, and they don't really, nothing makes sense, and it's just like, oh, who gives a fuck? Everyone's dead now, so we can just move on, I guess.
Spoilers, yeah, well, the world is corrupt, and they're just existing in it. They're trying, even when they try and do the right thing, it doesn't really matter. You know, that's like the ending of the movie. Yeah. I think the last line of the movie is something that he says, something, it still doesn't mean anything or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's sort of like, that feels very like a post-Watergate attitude. But this is 72.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Walter Hill probably wrote it before that, even. And Robert Culp did uncredited rewrites on this, they say. Walter Hill says 20% of the script, roughly, changed.
Yeah.
But he didn't really go into specifics other than that he thinks the muddle plot comes from the changes. Because according to him, the mystery of it was very tightly knit. And that if you pulled at any of the strings, it would unravel. And I guess Robert Culp pulled that a couple of those strings.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because this is my first time watching a Hicks and Bogey, and I was confused the whole time. I mean, not the whole time, but for the most part, it just felt like scenes of things happening, and I wasn't sure what was going on. It took me a while to realize they were private eyes. Going into the film, I thought they were police detectives. Okay, I didn't read the plot synopsis, but yeah, I don't know, the plot didn't work for me.
You're like, oh man, these people are going to have a hell of a lawsuit. A Miranda
lawsuit,
jeez.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, wow, police can do this? But anyway, I like the action though, but we'll get into that later. But the plot, yeah, something probably got messed up somewhere along the line.
I think that it reinforces that message by its... like whatever their initial journey is, which I believe is they're looking for a girl. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they just end up even more mired in this swamp, and then really nothing is truly resolved by the end, except that some of the major players are now dead. It's like, okay. And what did that change? They're still in this fucking hellscape by the end. If you want to watch a version of this that is a little happier, you can watch Brannigan with John Wayne or McHugh.
Oh, McHugh is good. John Sturges.
Yeah, McHugh is probably that one's probably the most obvious. Even has the ending on the beach.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't have a problem with like the dark tone. I like the grime and the grit, but I just couldn't follow it at times. I was like, what are these characters doing again? I know there's something to do with, like, they're looking for the lady, and there's the money, there's the guy with the submachine gun, but it didn't really come together fully for me.
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting movie, because by the end of the film, you know, it's like, oh, you really, like, kind of go, this is actually crazy. Like, there's a dude on a helicopter with a machine gun shooting the fuck out of them and stuff. And you're like, oh, Jesus Christ, what? Like, this did not start this way, you know?
Yeah.
But that's why I'm like, this is, to me, it's very like a Lethal Weapon precursor. Because the more that they like investigate, the crazier things kind of get, you know, to the point where at the end you're like, this has become this crazy action movie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they get hired by a creepy beach guy to just find a missing woman. He's like, I used to be romantically involved with her. Can you just find her? And somehow they end up in a shoot out between Black Panthers and a guy with a machine gun on a helicopter. That's where we end up in the end. And it's like, how you get there?
Yeah.
you should have just given up a long time ago. You would have been a lot happier, better off if you just gave up the first time someone pulled a machine gun on you.
Yeah. And to be fair, like their interest is only truly peaked when you know, like the $25,000 number comes up. Because our heroes, as it were, are not good folks.
Not really, no.
They just barge into crime scenes. And one of them is Bill Cosby, for God's sake. Yeah.
But the one guy, what's the chief? Is he a chief or a captain? He's the guy, he's the detective from Death Wish.
Yeah, Vincent Gardenia.
Yeah.
I don't know what his rank was. But yeah, he's there.
There's this like mix of things going on all the time whenever I watch this. I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. And, you know, like I forgot that James Woods pops up in this. And Ed Lauder.
Yeah. And Rosalind Cash from The Omega Man. Fresh off The Omega Man. Making love to Charlton Heston, and now she's back with Bill Cosby? Oh, that's a downgrade. No, no. No, you don't go from Heston to Cosby. No.
Yeah, that's like from my cold dead hands to from your cold sleeping hand.
I shouldn't be laughing, but I am.
But the other thing that this movie did, at least I think it did first, was the trunk shot that Tarantino copied so much of. Just a little shot of that when they open the trunk and the camera's pointed up at them from the trunk.
Oh,
but yeah, it is just like, I watched this movie, I don't know, it must have been like 15 years ago. And that was the first time I saw it, and I just was very impressed. And so, even though it's, honestly, it's not something that I want to put on a lot, because I think it is just kind of a dour, depressing movie for the most part. I do like that in a lot of movies, and I know 70s thrillers are sort of famous for it now. But I think this one, it doesn't really earn its way there, because there's so much of this movie that just gets bogged down, like right in the middle there. You're just like, oh, you know, there's only so much people watching clocks to tense music that I can handle, you know.
Yeah, I get that. The action I thought was really good, much better than the plotting. Like, the action doesn't really come alive until the shootout in the American football field. Or was it a baseball stadium? I can't remember. I'm no good at sports. But there's this really impressive shootout in like a sports coliseum. And you have like one guy with a submachine gun like hosing down this wall with bullets that Bill Cosby is hiding behind. And there's great sound effects. And there's all the dust flying up in the air. There's one shot of like a submachine gun like shredding like a chain link fence. And you see like a part of the chain link fence fall off. It only gets better from there. There's like there's an exploding car. There's, of course, we mentioned the helicopter finale with like the big machine gun and cars being turned into Swiss cheese. The action redeemed the movie.
Yeah, I think whenever the action comes, it's very good. Like I think it's very well edited, very well staged, and as you mentioned, the sound effects. That's one thing that is just fantastic here. Like just like the loudness of the gunshots. And the use of the machine guns. Although, one of the things that's very funny to me, that I think until like pretty much the end of the movie, our main characters can't hit shit when they shoot their guns. They never hit anything.
Like, during some of the earlier shootouts, like especially you have like Robert Culp aiming with his, because they all have these like giant like penis enlarging revolvers they have. And he's just aiming, and you just see him aim, and I'm just expecting him to, like, oh, yeah, he's just going to nail that guy now. No, he just takes, like, four shots and hits, like, a window is all he can do.
Well, yeah, the stadium shootout, it ends with what in, like, the Lethal Weapon movies would be the scene where he takes aim and fires and, like, hits one dude, you know, because that's his thing. But he, like, stops, gets in position, takes aim, and shoots at the very, very back window, like away from our people that are fleeing.
The guy with like 4 feet, the guy he's aiming at.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it reminds me of like the aiming in like Lethal Weapon 2 or James Coburn in Magnificent Seven, where you're like, you're expecting him to just, now he's going to nail that shot. It's like, nope, not even close.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that, you know, it's, I guess you could be frustrated by it, but I find it very funny because it's like these arc characters are just so, such hapless losers. So, like, I think that's great.
Although they do get the final shot on the bad guy. Not to get into spoilers too much, yeah. But they really blow the guy's spine out. It's a good squib.
They saved the best for last.
Yes.
Yeah. Bill Cosby went from popping puddings to popping caps. Oh, actually, it's the other way around, actually.
Oh, what a downgrade.
Popping caps in the asses first. Yeah. But the story goes, like, because this was, Walter Hill wrote this. He wanted, I don't know if he had directing ambitions at that point already. I mean, when did he first directed The Driver? Is that his, no, Hard Times is his debut?
Three years after this.
But his vision was that Jason Robards and Strother Martin were going to play the leads in this. I can see Robards in the cop part, but I don't know if I've ever seen Strother Martin in a coherent role.
I don't mind Bill Cosby here either. He's the only one with any charisma here. Most of the other people are just like voids of charisma who just zombifiedly walk through their role. But Bill Cosby, he's got some charisma here. He chomps on a cigar and he always says, like, we got to find that bitch. And, I mean, it's an okay role for him.
It makes sense.
Yeah, because he's the one that got the script, but he only wanted to do it if Robert Culp would join and was allowed to direct. Of course, reteaming them from I Spy, which is their famous TV show, which I've never watched. In fact, watching this, I realized this was the first film I had ever watched with either Bill Cosby or Robert Culp. I only know Robert Culp. Oh, wait, that's a total lie. I've seen several Robert Culp films. I just didn't realize he was in them. I was going to say I only knew him from Columbo, but it turns out he was apparently in The Pelican Brief and Time Bomb with Michael Biehn. Motion pictures I have seen. But he's in Columbo. He famously plays the killer on three separate occasions.
Oh.
That's what I know him. That's what I think of, at least, when I think of Robert Culp. I'm like, the Columbo killer. But I've never seen Bill Cosby in anything. We Cosby show, it probably aired here, but it aired like on a channel that didn't really do reruns, where they just like, we showed it once and then they just go on to the next series. So it never went into syndication in Norway. So I've never seen a single episode of Cosby show. I might have seen, like, some of Ghost Dad as a child, but...
What? Ghost Dad? The dad dies? Is that...
Ghost Dad. Yeah, Bill Cosby dies in a car accident and comes back as a ghost. Is this not a famous movie?
I've seen it, so...
I have not heard of it. Sorry.
That's when I think Bill Cosby, I think Ghost Dad. But first, I think rape. And then I think, oh, yeah... The guy from Ghost Dad.
I just think it was like them making fun of him on The Simpsons, you know, like they make fun of, like, you know, The Cosby Show when he's got his colorful sweaters on. He's talking like, I gotta get the Pudding Pops, that kind of thing. But that's what I think of.
Yeah, I knew him from Cosby Show and Different World. But it's just like, you know, you grow up with a guy that's just sort of like this icon. And then, you know, you find out they're a piece of shit. So I don't know.
Yeah.
That's American life.
Yeah. I was more familiar with him through his tirades against hip hop culture, you know, saying there was too much sexism in hip hop culture, that kind of thing. Then it turns out to be like his own worst enemy. That's kind of how I was familiar with him mostly. But anyway, so what was the plot of, Hicks and Bogey? Cause I wasn't even sure.
Well, it's like, they go looking for this gal.
Yeah, I got that.
And then, of course, just find themselves mired in a bizarre conspiracy. I don't know. It's, I guess, it'd be weird to try and explain every little beat that happens. But it's just like, our guys keep pushing against this, and it keeps getting them dirtier and dirtier.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really more of like the morality of it to me than the tangential details, I guess.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it's more of like a mood piece, you could say.
Yeah. Stein brought up the Watergate thing, and I think that the public's trust in the government institutions was already pretty low because of our involvement in Vietnam. And this is, you know, mid-Vietnam right here.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... it's heavily implied that at least Robert Culp is a veteran from... He's been to Vietnam because Cosby asks him if he's ever killed anyone. And Culp's like, in America? Because he's obviously been overseas killing people.
Yeah.
We just don't mention it. Or looking at Culp's age, he should have been in Korea, I guess.
Yeah, he could have been. But that's kind of like what the deal is there, where it's like, oh, as far as the movie has anything to say on our systems, I think that it's just a general displeasure in the existence of being an American.
Okay, all right.
And of course, you know, when that stuff came out, I think that the sentiment was already there. So it's more of a like, great, yeah, why not? President is corrupt too, cool.
Well,
of course, now it's like not even a surprise. Nobody would even blink. But at the time, it was just like, man, this is like bad.
Yeah. The more things change, the more they stay the same. But yeah, you can kind of tell that there's a little bit of that like Vietnam War disillusionment going on in this film. It's tail end of the Vietnam War, but still taking place.
Yeah, it's just I don't know, it's just kind of this like sad, cynical movie that I think the more I watch it, the more I do like it. The first time I watched it, I actually genuinely didn't. I had like a dislike. I appreciate historically where it stands, like I said, as a buddy cop or early buddy cop movie, even though they're not actually cops. Yeah. But then again, neither are our heroes in 48 Hours. So, well, one of only 50% of them are. The other one's literally a fucking convict. But I appreciated that when I first watched this. But now as I'm like, you know, I really like how kind of like mean this movie is. And I think that that's something I kind of like in general in my movies. So this is just this like, it's like two dirty Harrys who can't shoot. They really can't do anything. In fact, that's what you say. You just be like two heroes who can't. That would be my tagline for this.
Yeah, although Bill Cosby does kill a few people in this film, we should point that out.
They both killed like two people each.
Yeah, because Bill Cosby shoots a guy during a shootout in a parking lot, and he doesn't even know that he killed the guy, basically, that's what I gathered from the scene. He wasn't sure that he killed somebody. And then they, like, later show him being the dead body in a chilling scene being stuffed into an incinerator, so that kind of confirms that the guy was dead. But yeah, I mean, you don't do that to living people, but yeah, so they don't even know that they killed somebody in that scene. It's just spraying bullets around a parking lot.
I did look a little bit into some of the reviews for this movie, and they in general didn't seem to like it when it came out. And I did see people calling it undecipherable, so.
Yeah.
You're not alone.
Yeah, I couldn't tell what was going on half the time.
But generally, they don't have good things to say about the action either, and I think the action is ahead of its time.
Yeah, definitely. The action is the best part.
It's a shame Robert Culp like literally never directed any other movie.
Yeah.
Like his only other credit is like he did TV episodes and a documentary.
What?
It's like, no, I want to see more of your grim neo-noirs, Robert Culp. Can you... Well, you're dead now, so that's not good. But, like, you could have done some more movies.
Yeah.
Please. We got nothing.
Well, yeah. But it has become a bit of a cult classic, I think. I mean, classic is a bit strong, but it does. There's like Robert Colt did once say that it's been used in several film courses. I don't know if that's true or him just pimping it, but I mean, I guess it could be considered like, you know, that early example of like the buddy cop, even though they're not cops, and sort of being influential. I don't know if influential is the right word, but you get what I'm trying to say. It kind of was an early example of like two people teaming up to fight crime.
Yeah, that's what I think that it, as far as a historical marker goes, it's going to be most remembered for just kind of being a pre-buddy cop movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen some Westerns from the 60s that I think could qualify as buddy cop movies. I think Dirty Harry is a buddy cop movie.
Well, but that Kurosawa film from like 49 or something.
Oh, it was like Stray People Cat talk. Or Stray Dog or something like that?
It was Stray Dog.
Okay.
Yeah, Stray Dog. Yeah. People talk about it as like the first buddy cop movie.
I think like the modern sort of incarnation as we know it is the black cop, white cop thing. You know, the Lethal Weapon 48 Hours model, I would say, probably started like In the Heat of the Night. And this is probably the next major one.
Yeah. Makes sense.
But the one that this I keep bringing up sounds or is most like is Lethal Weapon. And I think that this is a very good precursor to that. And you watch those movies and you're like, oh, yeah, there's some of that shit in this. You know, the guy on a helicopter shooting people, you know, that kind of thing. It's like, oh, it's all there. It's all, that kind of, you know, down to those, like, stupid details like that. It's like, it's here.
Yeah, but that just makes me wish Gary Busey was in this film.
Well, they got the mute henchman. And that's this movie's version of that.
Yeah.
And, of course, that comes off to me like almost Bondian, where you're like, oh yeah, that's like a fucking, you'd be a villain for in a Bond movie.
Yeah. That's a little bit of pulp added to this neo-noir.
Yeah. It needs it. Yeah. These kinds of movies need that.
Mm-hmm. A little color.
But yeah, this is, I think the movie, the fact that it didn't do well financially, even though I think it had like a $1 million budget or something. It's like, that sucks. But the fact that it's not remembered well, or, you know, it's barely remembered at all, honestly, is too bad, because I do think Robert Culp probably could have been a very interesting action director throughout the rest of that, at least the decade into the 80s. And that would have been really cool to see what might have come of his style.
I agree. The action part really shows Culp's potential as a director. I mean, it's very impressive. I mean, it comes out of nowhere. I mean, some of this stuff, like the exploding cars and the submachine gun shootouts. And compared to the rest of the film, which feels very choppy and almost, like, I don't want to say amateurish, but it does feel a bit choppy. You know, and then it gets to the big extended action scenes, and it's like a totally different movie.
And, you know, that's too bad. Although, to me, that like sensibility of it, this sort of like just griminess, where like, oh, they're barely moving forward. It's just this sort of like inertia, still moving from that initial push of the beginning of their investigation. That's like the only thing that's kept them going this entire time.
That and chili dogs that look like Bill Cosby's diarrhea.
That's another Dirty Harry connection, is like all the hot dogs that are, you know, things are always eating. You're like, what the hell?
Yeah. It's disgusting looking. Super saturated and slop. But anyway, let's get that image out of my mind. So, yeah, back to the action. But yeah, I do believe that the henchman with one of the henchmen did a similar role in the film Bullet during the car chase. So there's a little bit of you can kind of see like the film history kind of like falling into place. You have Bullet, the rogue cop film, then you have the one of the henchmen is in there, and then you have Hicks and Bogey with the same actor shooting up people.
Hicks and Bogey.
Yeah, that's
it's Hickey and Boggs.
I know. I was trying to make it funny, but anyway, no, Hicks and Bogey. That's the film where Humphrey Bogart joins the KKK, Black Legion, right?
with Michael Biehn from Aliens.
Yeah.
No, it's I think that's a good point. That this is like kind of the next in line for that sort of like action hero type.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what Dirty Harry was sort of a play off the rogue cop thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just like, let's just take that to like the further extreme. You're like, how burned out can our main character be?
And they're all divorced. They all like just make coffee and eat these shitty chili dogs. It's just a nasty film in some regards.
It also just like Robert calling in favor still at his ex-wife or a kind of girlfriend, like to just like help this girl get a shitty strip, naked topless dancing job. And then it's revealed that, oh no, they're actually just at this joint in the middle of the day. It's kind of the twist. Like, oh no, 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 we're not, it's not
night. No, that's what I was saying before this about it, just like.
This is a 1 p.m. kind of.
These scenes just slowly, these things will just like slowly reveal themselves to be worse than you thought they were. These scenes, like that's a thing that they keep doing. It's just like, you know, I brought up the guy on the beach that's watching the kids. Like the longer this goes on, the more uncomfortable I am. Every other scene is like that, where they're like, "This isn't winning. None of this is winning."
It's kind of weird because this is Bill Cosby we're talking about, who has this very wholesome image. And yes, this film is technically rated PG before the creation of PG-13, but that doesn't matter. The MPA rating was just like throwing darts at a billboard. I mean, darts at a dartboard at this point in time. But anyway, it does seem a little weird that Bill Cosby would do this picture. Such a grimy.
Well, I think this this came out before he had been given, he had gained and then lost his wholesome image. I think at this point he was most famous for being a stand-up comedian.
Okay.
And well, he had him and quite
edgy in his stuff back.
Well, him and Culp were also on like the whole I Spy together. I mean, and Culp would kind of bring him in on projects.
Yeah, the whole wholesome thing that came about, and because of the Cosby Show in the '80s. Before that, he was much more, I don't know, like closer to Richard Pryor than to what you would know. whatever Cosby Show. That's my Cosby impression from never having watched an episode of the Cosby Show.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, but it still just seems weird to me, like through the lens of like the 80s that he would do this, but fair enough.
Yeah, it's this is like in retroactively this is him cast against type, but I suppose he didn't really have a type at the time. Mm-hmm. Unless you count his the character he plays on I Spy.
Yeah.
Which I guess would be how probably most audiences at home knew him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even sure how big of a stand-up presence he was in 72.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know. All I know is that when people are like, oh, yeah, talk about their favorite stand-ups and most influential stand-up, they always reference, like, Bill Cosby. Less now, of course. Less now. But back in the day, a lot of people like sort of referencing, oh yeah, Bill Cosby and his, I don't know, something bit. He had some famous stuff, I don't know, about shoes or some shit.
What?
And it's like, oh yeah, that made me want to be a comic. Now you're like,
yeah,
okay. That feels completely lost to us now for two reasons. His sitcoms and his rapes.
Yeah, unfortunately. I think, you know, maybe one day people will have gotten to the point where Cosby is not just this kind of like side joke anymore, and people kind of look at his career for being groundbreaking and whatnot, as it really was. But he unfortunately was a vile human being in life, and that's gonna probably follow him for a while.
Kind of made it sound like he was dead there for a while.
Well,
he was a vile human being. But yeah,
he's, well, I don't know. I think he's just a sad shell of himself now.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
But when he was vibrant and alive, he was also vile and garbage. So
yeah. Just like the atmosphere of this movie.
Yes. In fact, when you look at it now, you can be like, oh yeah, that's probably closer to how he was in real life.
Gotta get that bitch. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, not probably not destined to be a film that is watched with like the love and fun of like Die Hard, but this is, I do think this is like an important movie in the journey of action movies to becoming like just having their own little subgenres and things. This one is just, you know, it's a fucking buddy cop movie. What do you want?
Yeah, I thought it was okay. The plot was a bit too murky and indecipherable for me, but I appreciate the action and the atmosphere, so I'm in the middle on it. Didn't hate it, didn't love it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I love a downer neo-noir, and I don't really care if the plot was hard to follow. I feel that's like, that's most of them. That's just on course. If it's not like a simple, if it's not like Chinatown is like deceptively simple, actually, it turns out, because it's just like a murder. There's a whole, there's a lot behind the curtains. I don't know why I'm talking about Chinatown. Oh yeah, rapist. Sorry. That was the, but yeah, just a lot of these neo-noirs from the 70s, you don't understand. Like, there's just like a mishmash of conspiracy and you know, your hero's gotten himself in too deep. But also I can see why this has less of a following, because it is just such a downer.
Yeah.
Like, you don't... You have 48 Hours, Lethal Weapon, Nice Guys, for instance. Like, they're all... There's laughs and charms in among everything else. Here, it's just really downbeat.
Yeah.
And it kind of has a Chinatown-esque ending,
too. You brought up Chinatown, like, and...
Yeah, what does it mean? What does it matter? And then they just walk off.
Yeah, well, bringing up Chinatown made me think about that work, because that's, you know, that movie's about, like, oh, there's no fucking justice, you know? And this is, like, essentially, like, you could say that, I guess, justice was dealt, but nobody cares. Like, there's no hurrah about it. It's just like, oh, maybe that's just as sad.
Yeah. They just, like, let a few guys burn to death in a helicopter that crashed, and they walk off to the sunset as, like, some... folk song, at least they got each other. They have each other and some folk music, but yeah, it's not a happy ending.
No, and it doesn't look like there ever will be a happy ending. You know, it's just like, oh, that's the movie. You're like, yep, and fuck your happy ending, fuck your feelings.
Yeah, like, it genuinely feels like. Boggs and Hickey, they drank themselves to death by 1982.
Yeah, they're probably not going to last 10 years.
Sources of the labor, both of them. They're gone.
Well, then you go think about how 48 Hours is, because Nick Nolte is sort of that character. He feels like very much akin to what Robert Culp is at the beginning of 48 Hours. You're like, this guy would fit right in with them. He's kind of a shitbag, burnout cop. He does have a sense of justice, but, you know, the only thing keeping him from being anything like these guys is the fact that he is a cop as opposed to a PI. But that movie allows our character to grow and have some semblance of a happy ending.
Well, it's like, yeah, you got to avenge your wife, I guess, your ex-wife.
Yeah.
Happy ending, yeah.
But it has Eddie Murphy in it.
Yes, that makes a huge difference. Eddie Murphy, only ever picked up a trans hooker. As far as I know, he didn't do any of the rapey Bill Cosby stuff.
He was just giving her a ride home to be nice, as he explained to the police officer.
I'll take his word for it, I guess. Whatever.
Not like Bill Cosby, who was just tucking her in. I shouldn't laugh. Jeez. Well, Robert Culp, a nice guy.
Walter Hill, what about him?
Because I know very little about Robert Culp, and that probably means he was a good
good news.
Unless you know about someone.
Pretty good action director, ahead of his time. I think people just didn't know what they had. But then again, I think the rest of the movie, I think he doesn't seem to understand how to make that narrative work functionally enough to where it's simple to understand. But whatever, man. Like, to me, it's like, I want to see some good action, and this guy delivers. I think the action in this movie is better than the action in Dirty Harry, but I guess I would say that the character of Dirty Harry is probably a more interesting, fun character to watch than these guys. Not that there isn't an entertainment value to it. I kind of like watching just shitbag protagonists, and these are some of the best in that regard. But I don't know. There's gonna always gonna be that part of you that's like, I might care more about this if I liked them.
Yeah. I mean, Dirty Harry is a masterpiece, but there are some action beats in Hicks and Bogey that are probably better than the action beats in Dirty Harry. Although, yeah, I do love the finale of Dirty Harry with the school bus. But other than that, this one we're talking about right now may have better action.
Yeah. Dirty Harry, pretty straightforward. It's all just him taking a couple shots with the 44. And this is like every shot is taken with a 44. And a couple of those shots land.
Yeah. On a window. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, here we actually have it. Robert Culp was working on his second directorial effort when he died. He was going to adapt the comic strip Terry and the Pirates to a live-action movie.
Terry and the Pirates.
He's going to film in Terry and the Pirates.
Sounds like one of those.
He's going to film it in Hong Kong. But he was also 80 years old when he died, so he was supposed to be 82 when they started. He was going to start directing this movie. So, I mean, I guess Clint Eastwood could do it. So, I don't know. Maybe don't take a 40-year break between your two directorial efforts, because you know you might just die of a heart attack or old age, some might even call it, before you get going.
I've never heard of that. Terry and the Pirates. Is that like some obscure like Belgian comic book or something like that? Or is that something I should know?
No, I learned about it from reading about Robert Culp's love. Action-adventure comics were created by Milton Caniff. Originally ran from 1934 to 1973. I don't know. It was in the Chicago Tribune and the New York News Syndication. What this means... It was in newspapers. It was a newspaper. Tom DeHaven described it as the Casablanca of comics.
Oh, so I'll have to read this now. The Casablanca of comics.
I've never heard of it.
The Pirates.
But it ran for 40 years in the Chicago Tribune, apparently.
Good times.
Good times.
I don't know. I'm not that connected to the comic world, so I couldn't tell you.
Mm-mm. No.
No. It seems to be something Robert Culp was really into, and no one else, considering no one else attempted to adapt his screenplay for it after he passed.
Because it's called Terry and the Pirates.
It was just like, yeah, we're fine with not having a Terry and the Pirates movie. Apparently, there was a serial made in 1940. It's 5 hours long, so you can watch that.
Oh, we should do an episode on that.
Or get right on it.
sure. Go to your local library, see if they have a Terry and the Pirates omnibus.
I'm trying to remember. I watched some serial from the 30s once, and I think it was called Hurricane Express or something.
Oh,
and that was like 4 hours long. So I was like, I don't know if I can do that again.
I watched the Batman serials from the 40s, and that was not pleasant. It's just the same thing over and over again.
I watched those growing up.
Yeah. So it's the same episode repeated 7 times in a row. Not good.
But they're fighting the wizard.
The wizard, the iconic Batman villain. The wizard. Yeah. And the Japanese. Yeah.
Dude, those were fantastic. I remember there was an episode where Vicky Vale catches Batman driving Bruce Wayne's car because he didn't have a Batmobile back then. And she's like, why are you driving Bruce Wayne's car? And he's like, Bruce Wayne's a friend of mine. It was just like, oh, God.
It's something to think about when we do our Batman Palooza.
Yes. And I'll have us watch the Hurricane Express before that.
Oh.
No, it's fine.
I have not watched any serials.
Lucky. You're missing out.
Yeah, I'll get right on 7 hours of Flash Gordon.
Yep. Go back and watch I Spy, and you'll know who Robert Culp is.
I know him from Columbo. He's the killer.
In every episode.
Well, no, he's in a 4th episode where he just plays the killer's dad, I think. Patrick McGowan was on 4 times as the killer, but Robert Culp was on 4 times, but only 3 times as the killer. But they're great episodes. You should watch, especially the first one. They do this really cool thing where they just stay on Robert Culp's face, and then they play out the flashback on his glasses, but like a different images on each glass.
That sounds actually kind of cool, yeah.
It's like really wacky experimental. I was like, whoa, what are we doing? It's 1971, it's television. People are going to lose their minds. So yeah, check out Columbo. I love Columbo.
Hey, Columbo's great. I feel like we need to bring back the How Ketchum format. Because everything, we're so stuck on the whodunit and his or Columbo's style. I always appreciate that one where it's like, yeah, we know who did it, but how's he gonna like prove it?
Yeah, is that not what that Poker Face show was? Or I never watched it. I just heard it was that was sort of like they kept talking about it, like Columbo, but
yeah,
I never watched it. Anyone watch that?
I'm aware of it, but I haven't watched it.
Well, maybe they brought back Columbo, and we just don't know.
It's true.
Yeah. If you watched Poker Face, send us an email.
If you are a Jason Robards or a Strother Martin fan, done it or not. Let us know if you would have preferred that version.
If you are Jason Robards or Strother Martin, send us contact us via seance from the other side. Tell us, did you read the script? I don't know, Jason Robards' son is still alive,
I think. Robards? Is that his name?
Probably, if you know that name.
I don't know, I just know there's a Sam Robards at some point in cinema history. AI, artificial intelligence, the movie.
Yeah.
James Spielberg?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, if you're Sam Robards and you're listening, you got any anecdotes about your dad reading this script, write us an email. Please come on the podcast. Tell us about it.
Yeah.
Oh, but you know who is alive? Bill Cosby. On the show next week, Bill Cosby's coming on, guys. He's going to tell us his favorite pudding flavors, and we're going to talk about Leonard Part 6.
We're going to share some drinks and talk about Hickey Boggs. Done.
Yeah, you're going to wake up with your Boggs Hickey. All right. For more terrible content like this, go to alloutofbubblegum.com. There you can find links to our Discord and links to our Patreon if you want to fund more of this madness. just help us keep it online, really.
At the very least, go watch Hickey and Boggs. You can watch it for yourself. It's Undersane, yeah, criminal Undersane.
Yeah, I got a great new Blu-ray from Kino Lorber, I believe.
Yeah.
So you have no excuses anymore. It's not hard to find at all. Go to your local libraries, ask them to order it. And also ask them to take in the Terry and the Pirates omnibus while you're at it. And see if they have any Bill Cosby stand-up LPs. All right, that's it for now. Bye.
Bye, have a good rest of your day.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, listen, Bill Cosby, first of all, is my, you know, he's my hero ever since I was a kid, because I always wanted to be like him, and I got his albums, tried to emulate him, but I didn't like his stand-up, but I like the way he was as a man. Because this was before They didn't say he was a rapist on the fucking liner notes of the albums, you know? As my buddy said, he said, the worst part about Cosby was he was a hypocrite. And I said, I don't think that was the worst part. To me, the worst part was the raping. Way up high. And then the second would be the drugging. And then the third would be the scheming. But anyways, hypocrisy would be way fucking down the line, you know, like on the fourth page or some shit.